What is going on, everybody? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. I'm your host, Curry Blanford, and today I'm talking to Chef Kibbe. So I found Chef Kibbe on Instagram and knew for sure that I needed to have him on to talk about what he's got going on. So during the pandemic, Chef Kibbe has shifted from being an in-person catering business and doing in-person classes to running an online platform about cooking and connecting. So if you've listened to our podcasts very much, Magic Table or any of that, you know adoption and foster care is important. And an important part of adoption and foster care is trauma-informed parenting, because these kiddos coming out of foster care and even adoption, even from birth, have trauma histories. And so when we're parenting kids with those trauma histories, we have to think through how to parent them and how to connect with them, because connection is what heals a lot of those wounds. And so Chef Kibbe is teaching people how to connect through cooking, which is just brilliant. I mean, we all have to cook, we all have to eat, and we can connect with kiddos through cooking. And so we talk about Kibbe's history, how all that went down, the changeover from his previous business. And we talk about some of these skills in the kitchen. And even if you don't have kids that are in adoption and foster care, these are great principles for just connecting with any kid. And so I think you're going to get a ton out of this episode. There's a lot of history here, but there's just a lot about trauma-informed parenting and so much more. So I can't wait for you to hear this episode. Before we get started, I just want to remind you to make sure you're following me on Instagram and Facebook at Theology of Hustle, and on Twitter at Curry Blanford, just to stay up to date with everything we got going on in the podcast. So I hope you enjoy hearing from Chef Kibbe. All right. Well, Chef Kibbe, thank you for making time for me and coming on the podcast. I'm excited to chat.
I'm excited to chat with you. Thank you for making time. I know we're both dads. We've got kids running around the house at various times of day. So it's great that we could find a time when our schedules could collide.
Yes, right. Always the trick there. And be relatively quiet for a period of time. That's the tricky part, right?
Let's not jinx it, okay?
Done. Let's just start off by having you introduce yourself a little bit to everybody.
Absolutely. So in case you don't know me, my name is Chef Kibbe. I am a food service professional with over 25 years of experience in the food service industry. I'm a professional chef, a culinary instructor, entrepreneur, former caterer. But above and beyond all of that, I'm also a biological foster and adoptive dad. And the intersection of those two parts of my life, my professional and personal life, has been really what has shaped Cooking with Kibbe, my personal brand, over the last year in particular, which I'm sure we're going to get into shortly. But if your listeners are interested in learning more about me, you can look up Cooking with Kibbe at cookingwithkibbe.com. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Sorry, I'm not on Snapchat or TikTok yet. There's just only so many social media accounts I can manage at one time. But Cooking with Kibbe is how you find me. You have to leave off the G because it was too many letters for Twitter.
Ah, makes sense. Yeah, I was looking for you on my TikTok account, and I was like, gosh, I can't find this guy. What am I going to do? You know,
so. I've got the dance moves. I've got another hip hop class with my girls this afternoon. I've got the moves. I just, you know, I can only manage so many accounts. Otherwise,
dude,
I get
there's so much.
I get the ADHD thing going.
It's too much. There's too much out there. Yes, I get it. Sweet. Okay. Let's start sort of back at the beginning, I guess, a little bit. Can you talk just a little bit about the formation into like even becoming a chef and go, like, how did all that sort of play out for you?
It's actually a really interesting story. And I'm glad that you asked that, because I do think that is one of those God things. Because when I was growing up, I grew up in a Catholic home, and I grew up as a very picky eater. And when I say picky, I mean, my parents would take me to the local pizza place, and I'd eat croutons off the salad bar. I mean, a kid that doesn't eat pizza, what is that, right? And my parents didn't come from a culinary background. I mean, we did have home-cooked meals at a very regular basis, but it wasn't anything – I mean, it was typical Midwest meat and potatoes sort of fare. And living in a small town in Ohio, being a chef really wasn't something that the guidance counselors talked a lot about in high school. And so the idea of becoming a professional chef and a social media influencer, I mean, back when I was in high school, we didn't have social media. So that wasn't even a thing either. And so the trajectory that took me here, you know, I didn't see it when it was happening, but looking back in hindsight, I could see the things that God was doing in my life to get me to where I am now. One of the interesting things that took place was I had an opportunity to take part in a 10-day sister cities trip to Japan. So my small town here in Ohio had a sister city on Waji Island, Hokodansho, Japan. I didn't speak very much of the language. I didn't know much about the food. But for some reason, and in hindsight, I'm really not sure what the reason was, I went on this 10-day excursion to Japan, completely outside of my cultural and culinary comfort zone. Although I will say I did have McDonald's there in Osaka, and it tasted exactly the same as it does here. McDonald's, they know what they're doing. So they were able to recreate that same magic that they did in small town Ohio in Osaka, Japan. So I suppose that's why they're so successful. But anyway, apart from having McDonald's, I had a lot of really interesting, you know, taste experiences while I was there in Japan. And that kind of began to set a tone for me of being a little bit more adventurous and trying new things. The second thing that happened was that I moved from small town St. Mary's, Ohio, and went to move to big city Columbus, Ohio, to go to The Ohio State University. And for people that don't know anything about Columbus, they think it's, you know, it's just a big town in the Midwest. It's actually a very interesting city. It is very culturally diverse. I think it has the third largest Somali population in the country, or I think maybe the largest Somali population outside of Somalia. We have so many different cultures represented and different ethnicities and perspectives and worldviews. And that is reflected in the culinary offerings in Columbus. So I'm living on my own for the first time, and there's all these different restaurants, everything from Americanized Chinese to Italian to Lebanese to Ethiopian to Korean, and it continues to change and transform over the years. And so since I already had that built into me, the idea of trying some new things, and now I'm out on my own and starting to cook on my own and becoming adventurous, it just kind of one thing led to another. Combine that with the fact that I'd been, you know, waiting tables since I was, you know, 16. And then after graduating college, I took a job in sales for about a year and then hated it and just ended up back in food. And I just never left. I ended up going back to school to become a certified chef. And now, many years later, I'm actually teaching at the college where I first became a chef. So that's kind of cool as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I haven't really interviewed a lot of like chefs, you know, some bloggers that cook and stuff. But what was it about food that sort of like kept you coming back? I mean, I know experiencing all these different things was cool, but like, what is it about food that sort of like, I guess, speaks to you?
That's a great question. I think as a fellow musician, I think you will understand this, that there's a creativity to it. It's an opportunity to express yourself. And as is music, as is other forms of art, there's a reason why it's called culinary arts. It is a type of service. It is a form of hospitality. And I do consider myself a people person. And so it is an opportunity to serve other people and to love on them and to support people in a way that nothing else really can. But it's also a creative outlet. There's something very satisfying about putting something on a plate that you created. And I do think that it's a very sacred trust as well. And it's something that I don't take lightly, because anything that your hand touches, someone else is going to put into their body. And in a really strange kind of metaphysical sort of way, it's going to become a part of them. And so that's really cool. It's empowering, it's uplifting and encouraging. And it's a good feeling to have. But I will say that being in the food service industry is not nearly as glamorous as they make it out to be on Food Network or on YouTube. It's a tough life. It's a tough road. And there are a lot of times when there was a lot of depression as well, because just as much as that is a creative outlet, not everybody will take that creativity the way you do. And so everybody is a critic, and the hours can be very long, and it was very hard on my body, so hard on my body that I actually had to have reconstructive surgery done on my shoulder at one point. And which is why now that I'm in my early 40s and have had reconstructive surgery on my shoulder, I'm hoping to never have to go back to, you know, slinging it out on the line, on the saute station, in the weeds on a Saturday night. I hope to choose a career path that's a little bit less strenuous, both on my family and also on my body. And that's been one of the nice things about the interwebs and being able to create online content and be more of an educator. And also, when, you know, before the whole COVID thing happened, I was doing hands-on kitchen sessions. So I was teaching for people, for couples, for individuals, for families, and sometimes for, you know, small groups of business associates that wanted to learn how to cook or wanted to just have something fun to do together. And it was during those kitchen sessions that I was doing when I began to start seeing the connecting relational power of cooking, not just for somebody, but with someone. Seeing groups of people cooking together and the way it connected people really started to plant the seeds in me for what was going to happen later on when the whole pandemic thing happened.
Yeah, for sure. I guess until now, I had never quite considered just the intimacy of cooking for somebody. Like you said, preparing something with your own hands to like that's going into somebody else's body. But there's like a vulnerability there too, right? Like as you're cooking for somebody, you're sort of putting yourself out there, sort of like from a creative perspective. I had never quite considered that, I guess. But cooking and eating are such a communal activity, and one that has been done since humans first existed on this planet, right? Like it's one of the few things we still hold that like all humanity has done since the beginning of time.
It is a universal language, but I think one of the things that modern convenience has done, and I don't want to get too much on a soapbox and go off on a tangent here, but I do think that in many ways, as modern convenience has made it less necessary for us to be cooking for ourselves and with other people, we're really missing out on a part of what God had intended for us as families and as communities. And I'm starting to see that in my own life as God has taken some things out of my life as a result of the lockdowns and having to shut down my business and kind of transitioning myself more homeward, of seeing the relational aspect, again, not just of cooking for other people, which is tremendous, which is an amazing thing to be able to do, but cooking with other people, with our spouse, and especially with our kids and our grandkids, the knowledge that is transferred and the trust that is built, the connection that is formed and solidified through this act, not only because of the time together, but like you said, this trust that even if a child can't express it verbally, they know that when they've sat down to a table and they've had a hand in preparing a meal for their family, that they've done something really special, and that their grown-ups have entrusted them with something. And what that does from a neurological standpoint, from a relational standpoint, is it's magic. And that's why I'm so on fire about this concept, and especially for other families like mine who are foster and adoptive parents, because growing connections with those children because of trauma background and because of, you know, the neurological effects of separation can do to them, it creates an additional barrier that can be really frustrating. Because I know a lot of foster adoptive parents, and they love their children and they give them everything and they pour out their hearts and souls for them. But sometimes it feels like that's not enough. It feels like it's not being received. And it creates being very intentional and having activities that form connections in their brain to begin to build that trust, that they feel like they can trust us and they feel like we are trusting them. And I'm just so blessed that God has put me on this path and of becoming a chef and becoming a home cook and being an educator in cooking to be able to see that firsthand in my life and to see how that's transformed me as a dad and made me better and have made my kids more receptive to the love that I've always had for them, that I want everybody to know what potential they have with this room that we all have in our home and with equipment you already have. You know, it's not adding one more thing. It's taking what we already have and using it for a different purpose and with a different sort of intent. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think what you're doing is absolutely brilliant. To be honest with you, I mean, I'm in this, you know, we're both in this sort of like adoption foster care space and, kind of mind blowing, to be honest with you, that like, that this is a concept that's not out there already, you know, but like, once you say it, it's like, oh, duh. Right. Like cooking is connecting. Of course it is, but I'll speak for myself. I do a lot of cooking around the house. I love to, you know, barbecue. I have a smoker. I grill a lot. So I do the outdoor sort of cooking, but I indoors as well. But cooking for me with my children can just be so strenuous sometimes. You know what I mean? It feels like everything takes that much longer, you know, just because you're having to coach while you're cooking. And so I think some of the necessity of cooking for me sort of gets lost, loses the connection piece.
It can. And that's happened for me too. And it's been a struggle for me. I guess the two pieces of advice that I have for you and for other parents who have dealt with this is, first of all, changing your mindset about what is the end goal. Because oftentimes, again, you and I, we're both creatives. We both see food as an expression of ourselves and who we are. And we want to delight, not necessarily impress, but at least delight and to enjoy the end result of what we are creating. I have had to, and I've chosen to, in many cases, shift my attention away from how is this an expression of myself and my creativity, how much is this for me, and shift it toward how is this for my connection with my child. So moving the end goal away from the Instagram worthy picture or impressing my family with a meal to, did I successfully use this act of cooking and eating with my child to connect with them? And oftentimes I've been very surprised that it's the things that go wrong that have actually been the most beneficial, because it's when I screw up in the kitchen that I get that rare opportunity as a grown-up, as an adult, as a dad, to model to my child how to deal with failures. Because they don't see that on TikTok. They don't see that on Snapchat or insert social media channel here. They see the best, the brightest, the most successful. And if it is a failure, it's being displayed in such a way as to mock them and to laugh at them and to criticize and sometimes even to cancel them. And so being able to be vulnerable in front of my child and to say, hey, kiddo, I messed this up. What am I going to do here? To give them a chance to empathize and to see how I work through my own frustration is such not only a connecting activity, but is a modeling activity that they can then use to know how to deal with their own frustrations, because now they know that they're not alone in it, that even their daddy, the celebrity chef who has a website and all this, still messes up and still has frustrations.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is kind of understanding what are the things that children can do in the kitchen that contribute to the meal, but don't necessarily hold it up. And there are lots of things that can be done. Some of them not even all that helpful, really. One of the things that has been the biggest game changer for me as far as involving my children in the kitchen, and you may consider this at some point, is allowing them to chop up my scraps. That was not my idea. One of my kiddos literally came up to me. They saw me, you know, doing my knife work at the cutting board, and they asked if they could cut up the scraps. And at first, my reaction was like, no, kid, that's not going to help anything. But then God kind of came in and said, connecting. That's the important thing. It's not so much about utility. It's how can we use this time to connect and to model? And so I got her a cutting board. I got her just a regular kitchen knife, not one of the chef knives or anything like that, and put on an apron. And so she was on one part of the counter and I was at the other. And that was a turning point in our relationship, I honestly believe, because it was connecting. It was allowing her to model my how I stood, how I did my pencil grip and my bear claw, which if you haven't taken my knife skills course, you may not know what that means, but to model the way I'm holding myself, the way I'm holding things on the cutting board. And was she doing anything that was going to contribute to the meal? No. I mean, maybe the meal for the chickens, because the veggie scraps, the chickens will eventually eat. So I suppose she was helping them. But the most important thing was that I said yes, which kids need yeses. They need to know that they have agency and that they have choices and they are capable of deciding things for themselves within structure and boundaries, obviously. But that she was able to have that time with me and I was able to smile at her and she was able to smile at me and it wasn't slowing me down at all and is amazing. And we've done it countless times since. You know, anytime I have some scraps, you know, I'll be sure to let her know so we can have that connecting time. And sometimes, you know, there'll be conversations that take place as well, because when your hands are kind of, you know, in the onions and the celery on the cutting board, you have the mental space to be able to say, you know, how's it going? What's on your mind? What's been going on? You know, what's hanging? You know, what's cooking? Whatever the kids say now.
Literally cooking. Yeah. I love this conversation. And I think let's circle back to this because I don't want to lose out on sort of your story. Because I mean, before pre-pandemic, you were working in the food service industry, right? Like, and then the pandemic hit, which was hard on a lot of industries, but, you know, even more so yours. Can you talk about maybe just how that sort of went down and then like the aha moment for creating like what you're now doing online?
Absolutely. So up until March of 2020, I had a catering business. I had a small event space and I was doing the hands-on kitchen sessions like I had mentioned before. Pandemic comes, 15 days to flatten the curve, turns into now almost a year to flatten the curve. One of the things that went by the wayside is meeting in large groups and eating together. So that's pretty much everything that I was doing at that point, other than my job teaching for the culinary arts program at Columbus State Community College, which I was so blessed. God put that in my life just 4 or 5 months before the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. So I had just finished my first semester of teaching when everything went down. And that has been maintained throughout. I am still teaching. We had to do some things virtually online, but I definitely believe God put that in my life for such a time as this, because that has given us the financial wherewithal to not feel a heavy hit from the catering business and the event space and the kitchen sessions all disappearing pretty much overnight. But the other result of that was that I was home more and I was cooking at home more, and it gave me an opportunity to be in the kitchen more with my kiddos, which I'd been wanting to do for some time, but now I didn't have that excuse of being pulled away to serve other people. You know, one of the interesting things of being a caterer is that it gave me an opportunity to allow people to be present for the people that they cared about, you know, the mother of the bride or the boss or the executive or the host. But I wasn't able to do that for my own family. And so being able to put the catering business behind allowed me to be more present with my family. And that was when the aha moment came about. Because not only was I home more and cooking more with my kiddos, but I was also spending more time trying to learn about what was going on with my children. Again, as a foster and adoptive parent, it can be a very frustrating road of pouring into children and loving them and supporting them and giving them what you feel like they need and not getting anywhere. It can be very lonely. It can be very depressing. And we were very blessed to have a TBRI counselor that we were beginning to work with and continue to work with to this day, We love TBRI. It has been such a game changer. Hopefully this is something that you already know about as well. The trust-based relational intervention, it's night and day has changed things, especially when I'm putting it into practice. And it was in those shared acts of cooking with my kids that I began to see how the shared act of cooking and eating with them is empowering and is connecting, and that I can, it allowed me to take more of a proactive role in helping my children to become more regulated, to be able to take advantage of my co-regulation and begin to see progress in our relationships and in managing behaviors. And that's when kind of the aha moment came about, when I began to learn about trauma-informed care and the neurobiological effects of separation for foster and adoptive kiddos and or children. I say kiddo because that's what Karen Purvis always called them. I know for some people they don't care for that word. But when I began to connect the neurobiological piece of trauma-informed care and trust-based relational intervention and how my skill set as a chef, as a cook, as a culinary instructor fits all of those things together, it was a game changer. I'm not saying that everything got automatically better overnight, but I'm seeing progress like I've never seen before, not only in my children, but also in me. And the way I'm regulating myself and the way I'm being present for my children has improved so very much. And to know that this, again, that this tactic, that this strategy, that this method of proactive connection with our children is available to anyone. You don't have to be a chef. Yeah. You don't have to be a culinary instructor. You just have to have one of these, a kitchen, and be cooking together with your kiddos. It doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be Instagram worthy or Pinterest worthy. It just has to be intentional. And if you have the intent, you're going to see results. And if you are someone who is intimidated by the kitchen or intimidated by the thought of trying to teach your child about things in the kitchen because maybe you're not that comfortable in the kitchen yourself, that's where I really want to be able to come in and come alongside of those parents to, first of all, to share the mindset that I'm sharing with you right now about the place of cooking in the life of our family. But then I also have the benefit of having the experience and the background to be able to educate on things like knife skills and menu planning and all of those things. And that's where the content development and the course development and hopefully the group and one-on-one coaching opportunities will come about, where I can really come alongside of these parents and give them the tools and the techniques to be able to harness and more readily utilize this strategy in their home so that they can see the results that they want and need.
Yeah. I love that. So my wife's a TBRI practitioner, and we coach parents. We're empowered to connect parent trainers. So we do a lot of like coaching parents on how to connect with children. Right. Again, I want to go back to, this is brilliant. Like what you're doing is brilliant. I really believe that. Maybe I'll start here. You know, we have bio kids and an adoptive child, and seen the effects of trauma. But I don't, as I've gone through sort of a lot of this TBRI, trauma-informed parenting stuff, I've realized that this isn't like just trauma-informed parenting. This is just like good parenting in a lot of ways, which is like, hey, you should be connecting with your children, right? Like these aren't skills that are just for kids who have experienced trauma, who are in foster care and adoption. These are just like good practices for any of your children. And so I think what you're doing in a lot of ways is, yes, speaking to the trauma-informed aspect, but like also like, hey, cook with your kids. And like that's, it's powerful. It's very powerful. So I love that.
And let's face it, who has not faced trauma in the last year?
Yeah.
Right. Raise your hand if you have not faced trauma in the last year. Yeah, I don't see any hands. Yeah. Well, maybe that's because I'm sitting alone in my basement. But it is something that we've all faced. And honestly, you know, our bio kids have experienced it just as much as our foster and adoptive kids have faced it this year in a certain sense. We've all had the rugs pulled out from under us. We all face struggles at some point. And I agree with you. All children need to feel attached. And sometimes there are many parents that take attachment for granted. You know, even with probably especially with our biological children, we assume that because we love them and we feed them and we clothe them and we take them to this activity and that activity, that they're connected and they're attached to us. And it's when they start getting into adolescence that we start seeing the disconnect happening. And that disconnect becomes even greater when you add in all that has changed, you know, from, you know, the social network that has creeped in so much outside influence into our young people that the need for attachment is so much greater with this generation, because there is so much more about this interweb that is disconnecting children from their families, from their faith, and from those things that would keep them grounded and connected to truth. And I agree with you totally, 100%, that we need to be taking proactive measures like cooking with our kiddos to make sure that we have a very solid relational foundation for our children, so that they know when they begin to question things and when things begin to get tricky for them, they know where to come back to find their source of truth and of understanding and love and true acceptance. And again, to have that language of cooking with my kiddos to begin to make that foundation, I feel so fortunate. And that's why I want to share it with as many people as I can.
Yeah, I totally agree. And we have this parenting system where, you know, a lot of times, like say the need for regulation, for instance, right? One of our children become dysregulated, we send them away. Right? Like, you need to go somewhere else and get regulated by yourself. Right? And then when you're regulated, you've figured your stuff out, you can come back to me. Right? And I always tell parents, someday they're going to be teenagers and you've told them their entire lives that they need to go somewhere else to find regulation apart from you. And when they're teenagers, that's what they're going to do. You've taught them those skills. Right? But if we can teach them to co-regulate with us, right? When they're teenagers and need something, who do they turn to? You know, it's important. Very important.
And a lot of that is our own lack of regulation. We feel intimidated to regulate them because we don't feel like we can fully regulate ourselves, because we've never been taught by our parents about having the emotional intelligence. And again, there's such great research out there. These kids don't come with a training manual, but we have some great professionals in the child psychology field, and there's some great influencers out there, such as Empowered to Connect and Lisa Qualls, and through Instagram, I'm getting connected with many more just great voices out there that are offering some tremendous, not only resources, but just mindset help. And I think if parents can shift their mindset and understand how much influence they can really have on their children to help them to regulate and to change them and shape them and, you know, take advantage of the neuroplasticity that we have available to them, it is hard. It is intimidating, and you don't want to feel like you're going to mess up your kids. It's a tough job. It is a sacred job, and God's not going to leave us stranded. He's given us a book to help us along the way. And that's been the other thing that's been so encouraging as well, that the more I learn about neuroplasticity and interpersonal neurobiology and brain chemistry and trauma-informed care, the more I see parallels in God's word of it. And it's like, He's been trying to tell us this whole time. We just haven't been taking the time to look and listen. So that's been such an encouragement from a faith standpoint as well.
Yeah. Do you have some, just, I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you have some instances where you sort of have seen that you could talk about?
Oh, absolutely. The first thing that pops into my mind is this idea of affirmation. Of so many times when we're struggling with our emotions and with our kids' emotions, it's because we are acting out of a mindset that is not educated in truth. We are telling ourselves a lie. We are believing something that is not true. And part the whole idea of neuroplasticity is this idea is that we can reshape our neural networks in our mind, and we can help our children to modify the neural networks in their mind so that they are acting out of beliefs that are founded in truth. And so, in other words, to not be conformed to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of our minds. And that sounds kind of familiar. I'm pretty sure Paul said that to the Romans about 2,000 years ago. And it's true. It was true then, and it's true now. It might be in a slightly different context, but it still stands that we do not have to be enslaved to our thoughts. We can take them captive and can compare them to what is true. And if it's not true, then why are we still living in them? And that takes it takes intentionality, and that's hard. It's hard to sometimes it's more comfortable to just believe the things we believe and not challenge them. And I mean, that's one of the challenging things about faith, is that we have to die to ourselves. We have to put to death the things that are holding us back and replace it with truth. And death is not comfortable, and change it can be uncomfortable as well. And it's good to know that we have a Savior who has stood in our steps and has done the work that we have done, and all the time being in complete connection with the Father. You know, the Father is in me and I am in him. They are the example of connection and intimacy in relationship that has been in existence before the creation of time. And they have designed our bodies and our minds and our relationships to act in that same way. But because of sin, the trauma that has come about because of sin, we have to go through this work of reinstating that relationship. And he has given us the power and the ability to do so, and a measure of truth that we can always measure our beliefs by. And I'm so grateful for that, because the more I'm connected to him, the more I'm able to fight the limiting beliefs that are holding me back from truly enjoying everything that he has given me.
That's good. I appreciate that. I think you're so right. All that stuff is so entwined with,
and we shouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Right. I mean, yes, very much so. Yeah, very much so. That's good. Okay. So let's say there's people like really, you know, vibing with this episode. They're like, yeah, all that stuff makes sense. I need to be doing that sort of stuff, but are really intimidated by the kitchen. And I know besides like your videos, right? I'm going to put those all in the show notes so people can go start watching them. How would you encourage people to even like maybe dip a toe into some of this stuff?
Well, I actually just started a new program. It's a free program, and you'd actually mentioned this idea earlier that cooking is connecting, and that's actually the name of the challenge that I've put out. It's called Cooking is Connecting. It's a 20-day email challenge, and I actually built this as a way to introduce families to this idea of using the kitchen as a connecting practice. And the reason why it is 20 days is because it is built off of a framework that was developed by Search Institute. You may or may not be familiar with it. It's called the Developmental Relationships Framework. And it is based off of this idea that through about several decades worth of research, Search Institute determined that there are five basic areas where children need to have specific developments take place in order for them to be of a positive mental health and resilience, and to be, you know, not only surviving, but also thriving as young adults and into adulthood. And out of those five areas, there are 20 activities that they point out. And what I love about the framework is that they voice them from the voice of the child. Like the with each of these 20 activities, it says, I need this. And so you can kind of put your child's voice into that and hear them saying, you know, mommy, daddy, I need this from you. I need to be challenged. I need to be loved. I need to be accepted. You know, all of these things. And when I sat down and looked at these 20 activities, I said, well, my goodness, you can do every single one of these activities through the shared act of cooking and eating with your kids. And so I took the framework and I made 20 emails out of it and made it into an email challenge that anybody can take. It's absolutely free. It's easy to find. cookingisconnecting.com. Put in your email address and you'll get an email every weekday for 20 days going through the 20 activities in the developmental relationships framework. I'm going to, you know, describe what the activity is and then give you two or three or maybe four different activities that you can do with your child in the kitchen to begin to enact and to intentionalize those things in your home. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be every night, every day, or every week. It's just starting to see what is possible, what parents are capable of doing. And honestly, none of it is really from a direct kind of, you know, kitchen technique perspective. It's more of a mindset change. And if you can begin to do the mindset shift and start to see the results, I think you as a parent will want to then begin to find ways of making the shared act of cooking and eating with your children more intentional. And then if there's more support needed along the way, learning techniques and skills and things of that nature, then you can check out my YouTube channel and find it, or you know, sign up for my knife skills course, or look to me for online coaching, whatever I can do to help you to continue to get those results. But as far as looking for a great place to start, the Cooking is Connecting 20-Day Challenge is a great place for you to start.
That's awesome. You were just like, you're ready. You have all the stuff ready to go. I love it. I think that's important. And I love how I feel like it's so intimidating to, jump into the kitchen and just start cooking. But even just that mindset change, like thinking about like, what is the purpose? Like, how can I be pouring into my child through this activity that I have to be doing anyway, right? I think that's such an important shift.
It is a shift. And it's been a shift for me too, because I'll admit there have been many times where one of my children has come up to me and asked if they could cook. And I've told them no, because again, I feel like my cooking is for me. And I've had to be humbled to see that this act of cooking is not just for me and for what I need from a self-fulfillment and satisfaction sort of thing, but it is also a tool that I can use to help them to feel fulfilled and satisfied and not only nourished physically, but also relationally. And so it's been a struggle for me. I'll be honest. In my career as a culinarian, there have been many times when I've had trust issues with people that I've worked alongside, let alone trusting one of my children. And so this has been a work that God has been doing on my heart for a long time. So I don't want to sit here and say, you know, I'm great at this. I'm learning alongside of the people who are doing this challenge as well. And I think that's what's going to attract my tribe is for people to see and know that I'm not just some social media influencer, some celebrity chef that's trying to, you know, push something on people. I'm living this. I'm going through it and I'm sometimes messing up, but I'm learning along the way. And I want to share the things that I'm learning with other biological foster and adoptive parents so that they can begin to see the results that I'm seeing in my family and in my home.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, I totally agree. And I think that's awesome stuff. I think it's giving me even new life just to like rethink how I cook and how I, you know, just, yeah. Walking my kids even through what I'm doing, you know, as I'm, you know, I grill, but like my son loves to light the chimney. So he lights the chimney for me for my charcoal, right? Like, cause he's a bit of a pyro, which, you know, we're working on, but you know, just like simple stuff, you know, it's yeah.
that's an empowering activity. You know, especially young boys, right. They need to feel, they often feel like they're out of control in this world, and they want to be in control and they want to have agency. And so lighting things on fire is a great way to feel like you have power and agency in your life and you're not completely out of control. So let boys be boys, I guess. You know, I don't know if that's offensive to some people, but I mean, that's, I think the research is there. Yeah, but from a cooking standpoint, since you do have a certified chef and culinary instructor on the other side of the line, if you had to ask a question of someone like me that could be helpful for you in the kitchen and utilizing this shared act of cooking and eating, what's one thing I can help you with?
It's a good question. I think I'm going to go ahead and sign up for your knife skills class, because I think that's something that has always sort of intimidated me and something that like really, I'm just annoyed by it. I don't like that. I don't like the tedious like kitchen tasks. You know what I mean? Throwing a slab of meat on the smoker is awesome. You know, I enjoy making rubs and all that stuff, but it's the finer points of cooking, I guess, that, so maybe that's a good question for you. How do you like not, How do you deal with the sort of mundane tasks of cooking?
There are very few tasks that I see as mundane. I actually really enjoy knives and knife skills. And I guess that's why I've really taken to teaching it. And I've taught it to hundreds, if not thousands of people. I've gone into high school classrooms and taught knife skills to family consumer science classes. I've done it for kiddos, along with, you know, teaching it at the culinary arts school. But I do think that you've hit the nail on the head that, I mean, let's face it, how many times have you cooked a dinner or made a meal or looked at a recipe that did not involve a knife? And you can't get around it. And so if you have that intimidation by it, and I understand, because knives are sharp and they're dangerous and there's a lot that could go wrong. And so there's a major intimidation there. But if you can get over that intimidation factor and learn how to handle it properly and use it kind of as an extension of your arm and as a tool that you're just as comfortable with as you are your Telecaster. actually, I don't know what kind of gear you have, but that'll be for another discussion. I have a Tele sitting over there. But anyway,
it's a Strat. I'm a Strat guy.
Oh, okay. So I started on a Strat and transitioned to Tele, but Fender for life. But anyway, when you begin to have a hand around your knife and use it and feel as comfortable as that pick is in your hand, then it becomes an opportunity for you to be, you know, creative and expressive. Mm. And because there is an art to cutting food, because if it looks the same, it cooks the same. And if you're efficient with it, your body is going to feel better because you're not doing damage to your hand or to your wrist. You're not accidentally doing damage to your other hand. And it takes less time. And you open up so many more possibilities for yourself as a cook. You don't have to rely on pre-chopped vegetables or just recipes that don't involve a whole lot of knife work. And so that's why I'm so excited about this knife skills course that I put together that I called Knife Skills for Busy Families. It's structured in a 10-week module, which you could do in 10 days if you wanted to, but it's structured so that once a week, you watch a few videos, you laugh along with your kids, and in those videos are practical, just kind of general information, but also specific knife cuts that you're going to use in a menu that I give you. And so it's not kind of wasted time. Like, I got to find time to do this. It's, we're going to be cooking this meal tonight, and we're going to watch these videos that Kibby made for us to show us the knife work that goes into making that dish. And so you can work it into your weekly habit of cooking together with your kids. And so by the end of 10 weeks, you'll have learned all of the same knife skills that I'm teaching, you know, my students at college, and a lot of the basic knife cuts on, you know, all of the most commonly used ingredients in any recipe: onions, celery, carrots, tomatoes, broccoli and cauliflower, all of these things. So you're going to feel very empowered to be able to tackle, you know, any recipe. And not only that, but I have my kiddos involved with a lot of those videos too. And I don't think there is such a thing as getting children accustomed to the kitchen too early. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily put a sharp knife in a three-year-old's hand, but there are things you can use to begin to get them acquainted with how things are held and how things are handled and understanding safety in the kitchen. You can never start too early.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think I'm excited to try that knife skills class. So I'm signing up, you know, so I appreciate that.
At least take the free preview. Once you go through the first module, I think you're going to, your life is going to be changed.
I love it. That's good stuff. Okay. So my first question is, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
Strangest job. Let's see. The vast majority of my jobs have been in food service, although I did spend a year in subprime mortgage sales. I'm glad I got out of that. I got out of that. I wasn't very good at that because I was too honest and I cared too much about the customers I was trying to serve. So I wasn't very good at that job. I don't know that I had very many strange jobs. I guess strange for me would be the summer that I spent after my senior year of high school doing construction work, because I'm not really a tough kind of brawny sort of guy. I'm kind of a scrawny kid, but for some reason after high school I spent a summer, much of it spending time on the roof doing roofing. Got some pretty bad sunburns on my back. Yeah. So I learned my lesson there. It was a fun, interesting summer, but I'm glad I'm back in the food service that I enjoy.
I love it. That's good. Okay, so my final question then is, what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring God's kingdom more into their work?
As intimidating as that is in this cancel culture that we're in, people have been trying to cancel culture for as long as there have been culture. I mean, let's face it, Jesus, they tried to cancel him. They had to eventually put him on a cross in order to try and cancel him. And even that didn't work. So it's to be expected. The intimidation is to be expected. The unacceptance of it isn't to be expected. I think the most important thing is sharing the truth in love, because that's what God put us here to do. And whenever we're doing our work from a sense of service and of trying to provide value to other people, the gospel is just going to ring true through whatever we do. I'm, again, very fortunate that I'm in an industry that is all about serving people. Hospitality is literally about putting the needs of others in front of myself. And although that's the case, I have been in many kitchens where and worked in many places where I was working side by side with people who had a very different worldview than I did. But it was also a very accepting place where all worldviews were accepted. And so in many cases, it was a bit of a missionary field where I was able to share my faith and my beliefs. And sometimes it just takes living it out without being, you know, really preachy with it. Because if you're living out the gospel, people are going to see that there's something a little bit different, a little bit weird about you. And those people that God have kind of placed on their heart to be looking for something different, they're going to reach out to you. At least that's been my experience. So expect to be intimidated. Expect people to be offended, because the gospel is offensive. It is very offensive because our nature is sin, and he has overcome that. And it's a freeing thing. It can be a scary thing sometimes. And seeing the world that my children are growing up in and all the changes that are happening so quickly, it can be very scary. But God has overcome the world. And if we can, again, rest in those truths, be affirmed by those truths, we can live them out with confidence.
Yeah, good. Good. It was so fun to get to chat. I love what you got going on. And I'm sure we'll be chatting again. So thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Well, I hope you got a lot out of hearing from Chef Kibbe and just talking about connection and cooking and all these wonderful concepts. And I highly encourage you to check out what Kibbe's got going on. I have all the links there in the show notes. Such good stuff going on over there. You can learn a ton. There's the, you know, the knife skills class, which I'm planning on signing up for, and the email list and all that stuff is there for you. So I highly encourage you to go do those things. Do some connecting in the kitchen with your kids. It's awesome stuff. This is a great time to go to the bottom of your iTunes app and leave a rating and review there. It just helps get the word out about the show. I greatly appreciate it, and I love to know what you're getting out of the show. So that is very much appreciated. And until next time, get out there and hustle.